So our next speaker is someone very special. It's very special to me, if he's not very special to the nation and the world, but he is. Dr. Goldstein is Emeritus Dean and Emeritus Professor of Environmental and Occupational Health at the University of Pittsburgh. He is a member of the National Academies and a member of the Institute of Medicine. He has served on both the National Research Council and the Canadian Council of Academies, and particularly currently dealing with shale gas. His past experience is Assistant Administrator for Research and Development at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. And while he's currently dealing with shale gas, he's also dealing with looking at the intersect of environmental policy and environmental science, and he's going to stop me, but before he does so, I am very thankful because he's my mentor. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Goldstein.
Thank you, Maureen. I think she wants to get my the color of my face to be the same as the color of her dress. Maureen talked earlier today about the Environmental Health Literacy Project, and I know a lot of you are in the room, so I thought what might work best is if I tried to put it in the context of our struggles with the whole issue of health literacy and environmental health literacy in particular. The issue of what the opportunities are based upon how we understand things about health literacy and how we understand how we failed so much in the past is really, in a sense, what Maureen and her group have been moving forward. I don't expect you to read all three, but definitions aren't important except to the extent that they show some of the failings we've had with health literacy in considering environmental health literacy. The first two definitions, one comes from an Institute of Medicine report on prescription to end confusion about health literacy. Another comes from the CDC. It's about the Affordable Care Act, and it's both of these talk about the need to make appropriate health decisions. I actually prefer the third definition, which is the World Health Organization one, which is basically to understand and use information in ways which promote and maintain good health. We have a lot of that. In Pittsburgh right now, we've got a major health literacy project. The two competing medical conglomerates, if you will, are funding that, and they're really eager to have our health literacy approach be focused on access to care, how to navigate the health system, how to navigate a hospital system, rather than the kind of health promotion activities which would be part of other kinds of efforts, such as healthy food and certainly the environmental health. Here's an example from the health literacy of prescription to end confusion. These are two high school health literacy goals published by two states. The state of New Jersey, I've arranged it so their first six in that state, and all of the six goals in New Jersey, are the equivalent of the first six in California. California adds mental health, personal and consumer health, and community and environmental health as part of what their high school students ought to know to be as part of a health literacy program. And New Jersey doesn't. Now, maybe it's because New Jersey doesn't have any health, environmental health problems, but I tend to doubt that. One of the things that I learned in New Jersey, I came to New Jersey in 1980 because the state in its wisdom decided it needed to do something about environmental health at its state universities, and we proceeded to develop an environmental and occupational health program, and health literacy was considered to be one of our first primary efforts to work with the communities, and I took the lead and went out and convinced all the new faculty we were hiring that they had to go out to and teach at the local high schools and public schools. It was really heady. It was great. I really enjoyed doing that. But Audrey Gotch, who some of you know, who was a past president of APHA, headed our health education program and was able finally to convince us that while we enjoyed it, we really weren't getting anywhere. we really weren't teaching anything that was going to stay with the students, and that what you needed to do was a concerted effort to really focus on environmental health literacy, developed lots of K-12 programs that were just the general programs. The basic issues in health literacy are always there with environmental health literacy. I've distilled them down. This is from Beatrice Durbin, who's written a lot about this, and from a bunch of others, but they're more or less the same. There's probably about 20 you can put in there. I pulled a couple of them, which I think are important. Reaching target audience is tough. Bridging the gap between information and behavior is tougher. And I think we all know that in public health. Information is not sufficient, but it is necessary. Community context is crucial, and certainly Maureen this morning made a very large point about that in her presentations. Top-down information transmission often rests upon faulty assumptions about audience. Oh, yes, and I don't think anybody in public health can't just lay out three or four experiences of that nature. Mistrust in experts and institutions is increasing. Perhaps related to the next one, digital sources do expand sources of information, and they expand sources of confusion as well. And the focus should be on communication, not transmission. If you look at the perception of risk, which is a lot of what we really are talking about with environmental health literacy, to help people perceive and understand risk appropriately, there are two major determinants of how one might differ in their perception of risk as compared to what we experts have decided. And one is, how familiar are you with the risk? And generally, we tend to discount risks we're familiar with. And the other is, how much do we trust those who are communicating with us? And there's lots of others. There's gender difference and educational difference and whatnot, but these tend to be relatively small compared to these two overriding factors in how people use their information. All of the studies that have looked at the Gulf oil spill, the Institute of Medicine, I'm putting one up here, did a study immediately after the Gulf oil spill, had a meeting, and the take-home messages were included risk communication must be tailored to community understanding, psychosocial impacts may predominate, and lack of trusted transparency has psychosocial impacts. I don't think any of us would disagree with that. This is key, and this is key to health literacy. Unfortunately, lots of efforts at trying to deal with environmental health literacy deal with newspapers, deal with mass media. And almost all of the studies, when you look for evidence-based studies, they show almost no impact of mass media on an unconcerned audience. The general public simply does not store up environmental information for future use, and has difficulty with some of these complex issues, as well as our reporters, our journalists do. Most articles about environmental issues in the mass media are read by those who already have a scientific background. You know, we have, and I'll show you some of the things that are being done that are aimed at those with a scientific background, but still, that's not a major effort. Here's a study that comes out of the Consortium for Risk Evaluation with Stakeholder Participation, which is looking at the atom bomb cleanup sites and looking at how communities are responding. And this is just looking at the sources of information on fish consumptions in an area where there may be nuclear contamination or mercury contamination along the Savannah River. And as you can see on the far right of the newspapers, almost no information comes from the newspapers. Signs at the place where people are actually doing the fishing are you're directly in, if you will, in the face. And this study, by the way, was done not by calling randomly or any of those other kinds of approaches. This study was done by having graduate students and faculty go out and be fishing there with the folks who were fishing and asking them what they thought. And again, that's sort of crucial. So why do we want to do this? Why is environmental health literacy so important? Well, there's an awful lot of unwarranted uncertainty that occurs during disasters. I mean, there's so much information coming from so many different places. We have so many different things that we could do. I can recall the question coming up right after the Deepwater Horizon spill of what should be advice given to pregnant women who lived in these areas. And the best we could come up with at the time was, we being myself and two co-authors who were writing something for the New England Journal of Medicine, one of them being Dr. Lichtfeld, come up with this, well, if don't touch anything that looks like it's an oil spill, and if you smell it, maybe you should go away. When you look at it in terms of the mass migration of every pregnant woman in the area, you can probably just assume they're going to have more adverse health impacts from this migration, just simply by people being in unfamiliar areas, accidents occurring, any of those things, and you would from just following those simple rules, but wow, they're really unsatisfactory. We just don't know anything more, and the uncertainty in that kind of situation is one that preys heavily on people. The community, to respond to the community, they have to be able to ask the right questions. We've got to know what questions they're thinking of. They've got to understand enough to be able to ask the questions. Again, that's a reason. And the recognition of a trusted intermediary. If you've worked with people, if you've been part of Dr. Lichtfeld's community groups or any of the other community groups you've heard about, you're much more likely to trust the intermediary who says, no, don't get in your car and drive 100 miles just because you're pregnant. Here's what you can do, rather than, on the other hand, not quite sure what to do. So what are our opportunities? Well, the literature is pretty clear. Recipient readiness is central. We're simply not interested. If we're not interested in the information, then it's really hard to just get people to learn anything. Interpersonal communication works best. If you know somebody who you trust, that's going to work best. People learn most quickly when part of a new task or faced with a rapid need. And you can describe the community health worker program as being basically people who are motivated to learn, and they're faced with a new task. Integrating environmental health literacy works best when the knowledge is then applied. Again, I think we're all aware of the fact that if we get some information, no matter how well we learn it, we're not going to, unless we get to use it in some way, it's really hard to stay with us. One can argue that the basic fault in medical education is that as much prevention or environmental health or occupational health that you teach in the first 2 years when people are learning all their basic science of medicine, if it's not reinforced on the wards in the third and fourth year of medical school, it's gone. And that is, in a sense, true as well with environmental health literacy projects. So let me just recapitulate some of the things that Maureen told us this morning. The Environmental Health Capacity and Literacy Project is done by the Center for Gulf Coast Environmental Health Research, Leadership and Strategic Initiatives, I love these long names, and the School of Public Health and Tropical Medicine at Tulane. And among its projects, and I can give you it all, there's an Environmental Health Sciences Teachers Workshop. So the idea is professional development to science teachers. Science teachers will teach, in our experience in New Jersey, will teach about environmental health issues. They like to teach about environmental health issues. The students can then go home and talk to their parents about it if it's some issue in the community, but only if the teacher feels comfortable that they really understand it. Nobody likes to, in a high school class and someone gets a question that you think you should know and you can't answer it because you don't have enough information. It really makes teachers reluctant to be involved. The Community Health Worker Training Project, which you've heard about and you'll hear more about, but it's the curriculum for community health workers, which are going to be in all of these federally qualified health centers and other community-based organizations, includes now environmental health as part of all the other things that you learn. You're learning environmental health. It's a time when you're integrating new learning. This is part of the new learning you're going to have. And again, if it gets reinforced because people are going to ask questions in the clinic and you're the person to be able to provide the answer, it's going to stick with you. And there's an Emerging Scholars Environmental Health Sciences Academy, which is just incredible. These are young people who have been chosen. They are pre-college students, if they work with Tulane faculty and Tulane pre-doctoral and postdoctoral students, and they receive a check for $4,000, at the end of the summer doing their project to help them with their college tuition. And these are folks who we hope to be the future leaders in the field. Well, environmental health literacy, as I implied before, is not just an issue for our communities, it's an issue for our professionals, for our health professionals. Most physicians know almost nothing about environmental health. Most nurses know almost nothing about environmental health. Most pharmacists know almost nothing about environmental health. Yet they're trusted purveyors of health information. What can be done in that? Well, as part of the Gulf Region Health Outreach Program and as part of the Environmental Health Literacy Project, we're working with the Association of Occupational Environmental Clinics, and this is not only to provide training to primary care professionals so they can do a better job with occupational environmental health, and it's to provide that network that adds to the clinical skills of the physicians in the occupational environmental clinic and physicians and other healthcare providers, and provide the backup with the referral, a place to refer. Very often in a busy clinic, you might think of something, but if there's nothing you can follow up on it immediately, because you don't have any place, any referral, any doctor, any expert to talk to, it simply just doesn't get followed up on. So the hope is to do that. And as part of it, they've developed some modules, and these are continuing medical education modules that the Association of Occupational Environmental Clinics has done for many years, and they're right on to the issues that we're certainly our need for our health professionals to know about: the risks and benefits of seafood consumption, the airborne exposures, and the reproductive health effects. And two that are still in process are one on dispersants and one on taking an environmental history. So this is a comprehensive approach to health, to environmental health literacy, that's based upon what we understand from our failings of the past, will we hope work for the future. Thank you very much.